From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, April 20th, 2017. And on this day, strong feelings in Augusta from both sides of the issue about a contentious bill designed to punish what are often called sanctuary cities. Colby College has received a $25 million gift. It says it will use to fund overseas experiences for all of its students. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou, joebornstein.com, and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The visceral emotions fueling the national immigration debate were in full view at the State House today. Both sides converged for a public hearing on a contentious bill designed to punish what are often called sanctuary cities. Steve Missler has our story.
The debate over sanctuary cities ultimately drifts into legal territory, and that means there's disagreement over exactly what a sanctuary city is, or even if it exists. But for supporters of anti-sanctuary city bills, the issue is pretty simple.
Make no mistake, these policies and practices have life and death consequences. And we're not just talking about terrorist attacks.
Representative Larry Lockman is a Republican from Amherst. He's the sponsor of a bill that would compel local governments and law enforcement to act as extensions of federal immigration authorities. That is, to collect and share the immigration status of residents and to assist in the detaining of people who may not have received authorization to be here. Under Lockman's bill, the local communities that don't cooperate, the sanctuary cities, would risk losing state funds. Lockman says the bill will facilitate the removal of potential criminals or terrorists.
And it's reasonable to conclude that they would most likely gravitate to communities where they know the cops are not allowed to ask them about their immigration status.
Lockman is a controversial figure in Augusta, but his bill comes at a time of increased nationalism and economic and racial anxiety over immigration in America. President Donald Trump deployed soaring rhetoric about immigrants during his successful campaign to the White House. In one of his first acts as president, was to sign an executive order that withholds federal funds from cities that don't fully cooperate with federal immigration authorities. Lockman's bill and the nearly 30 other bills in state legislatures this year are essentially state versions of Trump's order. The proposals have been fought by the ACLU and immigration advocates. Prior to the public hearing before the Judiciary Committee, the ACLU of Maine organized a rally that drew close to 100 people to protest Lockman's bill. Opponents spoke passionately about how the bill will lead to racial profiling, discrimination, and erode partnerships between law enforcement and immigrant communities. But Fatuma Hussein sees something darker in Lockman's proposal, and her weary sadness filled her testimony during the public hearing.
We're not bad people. We're not criminals. We're tired of running around. We're tired of running away from violence all the time.
Hussein fled war-torn Somalia in 2001. She owns a business in Lewiston. She has 8 children. 2 have made it to college. And she doesn't see safety in Lockman's bill. She described the proposal and its accompanying rhetoric as fear and malice.
For them to spread propaganda that does not exist is wrong. It is morally wrong. It's the wrong thing to do.
Hussein invited Lockman to visit her family in Auburn. That appears unlikely, as does final passage of Lockman's bill in the reconciliation of tensions from the immigration debate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
There are more than 100 people in Maine on a wait list to receive Meals on Wheels. The actual need is likely much greater, according to advocates, and the program is at the mercy of fluctuating funding sources. Tomorrow, Maine lawmakers will consider a bill that would allocate $500,000 to Meals on Wheels. As Patty White reports, supporters say it would eliminate the wait list for a program that provides more than just meals.
Every Wednesday, 88-year-old Marceau Breton of Sabattis can count on a knock on the door from Meals on Wheels.
Hi, Marcel. It's Melissa from Seniors Plus.
Melissa Smith of Seniors Plus, which provides Meals on Wheels to three counties, unpacks a chicken dinner, a fruit snack, and a shelf-stable meal for future use.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Breton has been receiving Meals on Wheels for about a year now after a stint in a nursing home. He lost his left eye to cancer and is paralyzed from the waist down.
I'm stuck in the chair, electric chair. I do some of my work here in the house, do my laundry, do some cooking, but very little of it. So all the help I can get, I take it.
Breton also likes the weekly visit. His wife passed away several years ago, and his daughter sees him on weekends.
I'm stuck in the house. I can't go outside or nothing. I can't walk.
Breton is among the more than 4,000 homebound seniors in Maine who rely on Meals on Wheels every year, and currently there are more than 100 waiting. Most are in central and northern Maine, says Jessica Maurer of the Maine Association of Area Agencies on Aging. But the number is artificially low, she says, especially in Aroostook County.
Aroostook has actually capped their wait list because they don't have sufficient funds to go out and do the assessment, and they don't want to do the assessment when there's just no food or hope that the person would be able to receive the service anytime soon.
Seniors Plus in Lewiston started a waitlist in January that's already swelled to 92 people, says the director of community services, Holly Zielinski.
The need has just grown unbelievable. We're serving 1,000 more meals a month than we were a year ago at this time.
As the demand for Meals on Wheels has increased, Zielinski says funding hasn't kept pace. The program's budget comes from a variety of sources, from federal programs and block grants to nonprofits, foundations, businesses, and individual donations. The future of federal funding is in question due to a proposal from President Trump to eliminate certain block grants and reduce the Department of Health and Human Services budget. Zielinski recently traveled to Washington, D.C. for a policy update.
We were told that we should be looking at 18 to 20% cuts. And, you know, that's kind of gloom and doom. It really is, because that's a significant amount.
The state of Maine does provide some funding. It allocates about $1.5 million a year to the state's five area agencies on aging for a range of programs, including Meals on Wheels. But a bill that the Health and Human Services Committee will consider Friday would allocate $500,000 specifically to Meals on Wheels for the next 2 years. Democratic sponsor Scott Hammond says it's enough to eliminate the wait list, and the bill would also create a work group
that will sort of assess what the future need will be and then offer recommendations back to the Health and Human Services Committee for future funding recommendations,
which would hopefully prevent future wait lists. A spokeswoman for Maine's Department of Health and Human Services declined to comment on the bill until the public hearing. Jessica Maurer says she's not aware of any opposition, but there can be a lack of understanding of the impact of the program. It often serves as a wellness check, as well as an important source of nutrition for seniors.
The reality is that often the simple delivery of a meal can keep a person living in their home for a significantly longer period of time than they would have to potentially be institutionalized.
When Jeanette Bollier of Lewiston returned home from a hospital stay earlier this year, she relied on Meals on Wheels because she didn't have the strength to cook.
I didn't have to, you know, force myself to do it. I couldn't even do it. It was too tiring.
After a month, she got her energy back and now cooks her own meals. She says she wanted to give her Meals on Wheels spot to someone else who needs it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Colby College has received a $25 million gift it says it will use to fund overseas experiences for all of its students, regardless of their ability to pay. The college is calling its new Davis Connects program a first for a liberal arts school. And as Jennifer Mitchell reports, the goal is to use the money to transform the liberal arts themselves.
It doesn't look like much at the moment. It's an old frat house getting a facelift, but this fall, this building will open as the home of a new program called Davis Connects. It's the result of a multi-million dollar gift from investor, philanthropist, and alumnus Andrew Davis and his family.
Well, I mean, when you talk about making the gift, it's not as if I just snapped my fingers and said, oh, I have an idea. No, David and I have been talking about this for some time.
Maybe 70 people in here for a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
He's referring to Colby College President David Green, who's showing him around the half-finished building. Both men are aware of the criticism that liberal arts institutions such as Colby have faced in recent years. Critics have shown little love for the humanities. Republican presidential candidate Senator Marco Rubio perhaps summed it up best when he said at a debate last year that the world needs, quote, more welders and less philosophers, end quote. But Davis has a different view, and he's willing to back it up with $25 million.
So I think the liberal arts education in many ways is, if you're arguing that it is passé, I think it is quite the opposite. I think right now there's no better time for it. Employers, the world is changing. We need thinkers. Mm-hmm. And this country has always provided them. And the liberal arts education is one of the major reasons why.
Davis says the need for thinkers isn't going away, and that's where the new program comes in. The school describes it as a transformation of the liberal arts with a goal to ensure that students have an unlimited set of postgraduate opportunities. A major cornerstone, for example, is making overseas experience accessible to all students, not just those whose families can afford it.
I'm really excited to hear that because being a first-gen, low-income student, that's something that we, like, as a community would really benefit from.
That's first-year student Giselle Castro. In true liberal arts fashion, she's focusing equally on biology and religion. Whether she'll go abroad on a science research project or to study cultural beliefs, she hasn't decided that yet. But without the new funds, she says her studies would have ended in the classroom. Her friend Chris DeLuna is also at Colby on a scholarship. Until now, she was never sure if she'd be able to go abroad.
I think studying abroad is a huge part of getting that cultural experience. And being like immersed in a culture versus just being in a classroom and learning about it is completely different.
Our students are going to be global players, whether they like it or not.
And says Colby College President David Green, Davis Connect will go beyond simple study abroad. Students are also encouraged to apply for internships, research projects, and also to learn how to work and live overseas.
The more facility they have in moving from one country, one culture to another, the better off they'll be in the world, the better they'll be able to lead, the better understanding that they'll have in the world. And I'll have to say, if we're looking for things like peace and prosperity in the world, then we need our young people today to really understand what it means to be a global citizen.
Davis Connects is expected to launch this fall. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, April 20th. Thanks to Susan Sharon, Keith Shortall, A.J. Higgins, Mal Leary, and our digital team, Amit Morin.